going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices and give you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
I've never felt like this before. It's like you just get me. I feel like my true self with you. Does that sound crazy? And it doesn't hurt that you're gorgeous. Okay, that's it. I'm taking you home with me. I mean, you can't find shoes this good just anywhere. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Good morning, DFW. It is Sean and RJ on 105.3 The Fan. I am RJ Choppy. He's Bobby Belt, Peyton, and Aiden alongside. Bobby's already giving me a look.
Boy, if for all the hell you guys give me about showing up late, I hope whenever Sean finally gets through the traffic and gets here this morning, right, you guys just give him real hell for waking up late. Because I'm the one who always gets it from you guys.
You do. You get it. Get it from both sides. You do.
Actually, I think he woke up, I think it was more than just a few minutes late. I think he woke up like a week late. So I don't think he's going to be here until next week.
Yeah, he'll be on time next week. He'll be on time next week.
How much PTO does he get in his contract, man? I mean, I need to be a host or something. Oh, is it still?
It's a fourth baby, I guess.
It's another week.
The baby's in high school now.
You what?
The baby's in high school
now. The baby's already in like daycare, preschool, pre-K.
No, this is mercifully, if you're wondering out there, this is mercifully the last week of paternity that he has milked from this company.
Yeah, it is. It absolutely is. And he'll still have his regular vacation throughout the course of the year.
Oh, yeah.
It's good. It's good to have a newborn.
Sure.
I suppose. From a time off perspective.
You could stack up some of that PTO. I'm sure you did over the last 10 days. About 9 months from now, I'm sure.
I could. Let's see. How would that still be in this calendar year? Yeah, it would be. I think it would be. Barely.
So
barely getting it in.
Or you would be able to just kick it off next year. You'd get your 12 weeks of maternity leave or paternity leave like Sean got.
Full year. Jet lag is I don't really feel it. I feel good. I feel refreshed this morning. I got to say that.
Good.
We landed yesterday around 3:00. I didn't make it much past that. I didn't make it much past 7 last night.
Yeah, you didn't make it much past your email. I know that.
I sent my email to you and then I was watching the last thing I remember was watching Joe Mazzulla between the first and second quarter. And that was the last thing I remember. That was the last thing I remember until about 2:30 in the morning when I woke up to pee.
Yeah, typically if I call and you don't answer, I'm going to get a call back within like 30 minutes. And it's usually related to I was at the gym or I was playing baseball with the boys. And I just did. But like as soon as you see it, you usually answer. But if you don't answer, you're going to call back within 30 minutes. When you didn't call back and didn't reply to the text, I was like, he's
out.
He's getting beat to death by the return to Central Standard Time.
Yeah, it was because I think at the time I was up for about 20 hours, 21 hours.
Oof.
On about 4 hours of sleep. We went to bed around 12 the night before and then woke up at 4:30 to get to our flight. We had to pack and everything, so it was a long day. It was a fun trip, and we'll get into that at some point. Well, for sure, and best of worst, but also sprinkle it in around the rest of the show. But the story of the weekend was certainly the NFL draft, which you heard right here on 105 through the Fan.
Yeah.
All the rounds right
and
here.
And we'll get into specifics of the Cowboys' entire draft class next segment. In fact, if you want to be on the fan cam, you can jump on the Twitch or YouTube or 105 through the fan.com and check out the fan cam. We'll have as we're talking about things, I sent Aiden some tape, some footage that we'll use from draft study. So you'll be able to see some of what these players are capable of if you're watching on the fan cam. But that's, you know, Cowboys get a lot of really good players that I think were, the philosophy really was best player available this time around. They did not go for need. And so we'll be able to dive into a little bit more of that. But yeah, I think the broader discussion over the weekend has clearly focused around Shedeur Sanders. Some of Mel Kiper's commentary about it every day. There was a lot of criticism for the fact that they missed the moment of Cam Ward getting the call. They knew he was number one, but they missed that shot on ESPN because they were busy talking about Shedeur before, like, just right out of the gate. But before we get into the Shedeur stuff, I'm curious, because you were not here on Friday.
No.
Your thoughts, your opinions on the Cowboys drafting another offensive lineman in the first round.
Got no problem with it.
You're fine with it?
Yep, fine with it.
There's a lot of unhappy people. I would say it was 60-40 were happy with the pick because they know Tyler Booker is a really good player. But there was a chunk of people who were just annoyed that it was another trench player.
Well, look, I get it. I get it that, you know, you want to have somebody who is going to be like a splashy player in the first round. I understand that. I don't understand, though, that the idea that a guard at 12 is bad value. I don't understand.
Yeah, naturally, it can't. Like, I agree. Yeah, because, I mean, just naturally saying because that position, that can't ever be a good pick. I don't think that's right.
I also think it's a very valuable position.
Sure. Especially in today's NFL.
Yeah, like, to me, you know, and Mel had, like, good takes and bad takes that I saw over the internets over the weekend. This was a bad take that he wrote in, you know, when his grades and winners and losers and stuff, where he said, you know, getting an interior offensive lineman is not great value at 12. I'm like, that's BS, man. Like, that is good value. I'm sorry. Like, a guard is a position of value. People have no problem taking a defensive tackle at 12. Why would you not have a problem taking a guard at 12?
How do you beat Aaron Rodgers? How did you beat Tom Brady? How would you beat Patrick?
Through the middle.
It's A-gap pressure. And that's become a big focus for teams, and that's in the age of the Aaron Donalds and stuff like that. We've talked about it. With teams getting the ball out so quickly, it's become so much more valuable to be able to generate pressure right up the middle.
Absolutely.
Because it's a quicker track to the quarterback. You can get in his face immediately and disrupt the play. And so that's something that happened to the Cowboys a lot last year, was getting disrupted in there. So I agree. I think the position itself is not one that is naturally devalued the same way we've talked about running back before, really high. I don't think it's the same comparison at all.
Is it on the level of a left tackle or wide receiver or quarterback or whatever? Right. No, it's not.
Yeah.
And we know that. But I have zero issue with them taking Tyler Booker at 12. If he may not be a good player, we don't know. Like, he may turn out to be a bust.
I think he's pretty.
He's pretty
safe. This is not a Tyler Guyton pick. This isn't even a Tyler Smith pick. Tyler Guyton and Tyler Smith were the same guy essentially when they got picked initially, which was the idea of just, these are really talented players who are super raw. Now, Tyler Smith worked out really quickly. Tyler Guyton, not so much. But I still have hope for Tyler Guyton. So the difference with Tyler Booker here is that you've got a guy who the floor, when you talk about ceilings and floors and what they're capable of, this dude is ready to play in the NFL now. Like, more so than probably the most pro-ready offensive lineman they've picked since probably Zach Martin. Now, that's not to say he is Zach Martin, so I don't want anybody getting confused with that or me saying that he has the potential to be as good as Zach Martin. But he's as ready to go as a starter now with as few mistakes as possible. The most ready offensive lineman they've picked since Zach Martin. And so you're going to get an NFL ready player now. Yeah. And so that's huge. And you've got somebody who probably, definitely has the capability of becoming a Pro Bowl player at some point.
To me, I just don't understand why you would, again, like, if you want splash, that's a different topic. But the Cowboys have generally, and I've always believed that if you're great at selecting a certain position, like, if you just evaluate it well, kind of lean into that. You can't miss on your first rounder.
Right.
You can't miss on your first rounder. So that was my take on the Booker pick, and we'll get into the other selections the Cowboys had as the show goes on. It's Sean and RJ on 105 through the Phantom. RJ Choppy, he is Bobby Belt.
But what were you thinking as you were sitting off in, I don't know, wherever you were, some cafe? Let's see,
on Thursday, we were in Florence.
Florence. Okay, so what were you thinking as you sat in Florence about surely Shador will get picked somewhere here in the back end of the first. And then, okay, well, surely he'll get picked at the beginning of the second. And then when it rolled into day three, did any part of you wonder, they're gonna teach him a lesson, quote unquote, and they're gonna let him fall out of the draft?
Let's see. It was like 3 a.m. when the draft was going on.
So baby, it's 3 a.m.
I didn't catch any of that.
No,
live.
I know. Yeah. I'm just more in retrospect. You get what I mean.
I was pretty surprised that nobody took him in the first round. Not stunned. I was more like, oh, okay. That's interesting. And then when, you know, he didn't go on like the first part of day two, you know, I woke up the next morning and it was like, wait, he didn't go again? Or I woke one of my college buddies texted, Jalen Milroe just got picked before Shador. I woke up to that text. I was like, you've got to be kidding me.
Dude,
you've got to be kidding me.
It was reasonable for him to fall out of the first round. When we left here on Friday and Sean and I were talking about this, I had said, all right, Shador will, my guess, I don't know, because I thought he'd go in the first, the back end of the first. I knew it was possible he could fall out, but I thought he'd go in the back end of the first. But the fact that Jackson Dart went ahead of him and nobody seems like super in love with him, then I was like, okay, well, I'm going to guess he doesn't get past the fifth pick of the second round, because you've got two Browns picks and then you got the Raiders. And so one of them will take him, I'm sure. And when you got through that and you had the Raiders passing on him a couple times and then you had the Browns picking the moment I went, uh-oh, they're sending a message here, was when Dylan Gabriel got picked ahead of him by the Browns. It was like, okay, that feels like you're trying to send a message to him. And maybe it worked. To Shador had, you know, to his credit, over the weekend when he gave an interview, or I guess when he talked to the Cleveland beat after he got picked, Shador had talked about the fact that, yeah, maybe I should have handled some things differently. So I don't know. Maybe some of it resonated with him to some extent. But I asked people around the league about it when we were heading into day three, and everybody unanimously was like, yeah, the talent, he should be off the board by now.
Right.
This is more about the personality and people just saying, we don't want to deal with it.
Look, it just reminds me of, like, we've not seen a player drop this like this. We just haven't. We haven't seen that. We've seen, like, you know, Rodgers dropped, Jordan Love dropped,
Malik Willis dropped to the third round, but like it was the third round. Like, he could have gone in the first, and then we're waiting around until the third, and we're like, oh, okay, this took forever for him to get. But no, you're right. We haven't seen anybody that was talked about like this that then just collapses into the fifth round.
I mean, it just doesn't happen. And you know, you want to get them to collapse to the late 20s. That's one thing, but collapsing into the fifth round just doesn't happen.
I thought whatever message they wanted to send was sent after 2 days, and somebody would pick him in the first five picks on day three. But again, I thought that
still,
on day
and
two
it still didn't
as
happen.
Well, no, it didn't. He still had to wait around.
It's for another 30 something picks, 40 picks. Right?
I think what it does really speak to, though, is he did not handle himself well.
Oh, he did not.
During the process.
I told
you guys the story behind the scenes of, there was a really well thought of prominent coach in the NFL circles who tried to just say hi to him after a gym workout at the combine. And he just walked right by him and told him, like, you guys got a quarterback. I ain't got time for you. And he walked by him. And he did that to a couple different coaches.
Yeah.
And I think that just didn't sit well with a lot of people in the league.
It shouldn't. Like, you can't handle yourself in certain ways. We got some audio to play, and you know, Rick Neuheisel told a story about this, about a coach that he had heard, that he had talked to about what happened in their meeting. We've seen now, like, people are bringing up articles that were written over the last, you know, right after the combine, and like with their little notes on him. Like, this happened. They're just kind of just bringing him back. It's a tough day for Shador. It's a tough weekend. Tough look for him. Tough for Deion.
He didn't get close to their pick in the fifth round. And I know we were chit-chatting about this. We'll probably talk in greater detail about it, or just kind of what you would have wanted or what listeners would have wanted. But I think if he would have slid down to their pick in the fifth round, Dallas was taking him. Because I think Dallas, by the time day three rolled around, was like, yeah, that's the best player left on the board.
Oh, for sure.
And then that's just, at that point, it's a blinking light. You go, you got to take that.
Speaking of best player left on the board, that's basically what they did the entire weekend in the draft. But what do they do about number two, the number two wideout. We'll get into that. Sean and RJ on The Fan next. 105.3 The Fan.
This podcast is brought to you by Men's T Clinic. One visit can change your life. Men's T Clinic offers a variety of men's wellness programs to help you meet your goals and keep you as strong as you've ever been. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-T today or visit mensteclinic.com. That's mensteclinic.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Visit DollarShaveClub.com and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more.
Hey everyone, quick shout out to Whole Foods Market. You know I'm all about eating fresh and finding quality ingredients, and that's exactly what Whole Foods delivers. Whether you're grabbing organic produce, high quality meats, or just a quick healthy snack, they've got you covered. Plus, they're all about sustainability and supporting local farmers, which I love. Next time you're grocery shopping, check them out. You'll taste the difference. Spring is the perfect time to refresh your table, and Whole Foods Market has everything you need. Hosting brunch? Picture this. Flaky, buttery quiche, crispy bacon, fresh berries, and of course, cold-pressed orange juice to brighten up your morning. And if you're in the mood for something fizzy, check out their seasonal Italian sodas. Berry Blend and Orange Hibiscus are total must-tries. So whether you're planning a casual get-together or a full-on feast, Whole Foods Market has you covered. Make Whole Foods Market your destination for all spring gatherings.
MLB.TV is home to baseball's biggest stars. Watch every out-of-market game, live or on demand.
He got it! Woo! This is unbelievable!
Plus, you'll get 24/7 access to MLB Network. Stream every big pitch.
He struck him out!
Every home run.
Gone!
Everything baseball, all season long on MLB.TV. Start a free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Good morning, DFW. Sean and RJ, 105.3 The Fan. The Firehouse Tour, Bobby, is back this week.
It is, and it's a little different. For the first time in the history of the Sean and RJ Firehouse Tour, which we've done, oh, I don't know, we've done like 14, 15 of these, something. Maybe more than that now at this point. But for the first time in the Sean and RJ Firehouse Tour history, we're going to do this on a Wednesday so that we can fit it in here into the month of April. So this is
2 days from now.
Uh-huh. This is stop number two on the 2025 tour. So we're going to Anna. So if you are in Anna, Blue Ridge, Prosper, Melissa, McKinney, Princeton, Salina, etc., this is probably going to be the Firehouse Tour for you. And we're going to have breakfast from Whataburger as well as special edition Sean and RJ Firehouse Tour baseball caps. And those will go fast, just like the aprons did. So make sure you swing by and get yours. That's 305 South Powell Parkway in Anna. 305 South Powell Parkway in Anna. It's the only fire station in Anna. So just look up the Anna Fire Station, and that's where we're going to be. So thank you to Whataburger, Firehouse Eating and Air, and Firehouse Movers for being our partners on this year's Firehouse Tour.
Yeah.
And because we're close to Princeton, which is the home of Nick Harris, I did text with Nick Harris last night. Nick Harris is going to drop by in person and hang out with us for a little bit.
I have spent many the day in Melissa, Texas, and Princeton for baseball.
I once...
Many the day.
The very first time I ended up in Melissa was because my mom got lost trying to drive to Garland, which if you know how far apart Garland and Melissa are, you know she took several wrong turns.
That's a lot of wrong turns.
And just didn't...
And then not even paying attention. Yeah. Like you just keep driving.
Yeah, just kept driving and going like, we're kind of... why are they selling fireworks by the side of the road? That is not Garland.
All right, so that's Wednesday, Firehouse Tour in Anna. We are also the home, and we're the home of the NFL draft, where this took place on Friday.
With the 44th pick in the 2025 NFL draft, the Dallas Cowboys select Donovan Ezeraku, defensive end, Boston College.
There we go, Travis.
Yeah.
Good job executing that.
The commissioners that can't be bothered with any pick besides the first round.
Yeah, but he'll come up there. He'll do a couple in the second, but they've just turned it into like a, oh, let's have legends do it, yeah. Or like let's give it as something where somebody's got to make a wish, so we're going to have them make the pick or whatever. But yeah, the Cowboys get a couple of really good players on Friday. With second round pick, it was edge rusher Donovan Ezeraku, who you just heard about there from Boston College.
So not a wide receiver.
No, not a wide receiver.
All right. So surely they would have got one in the third round.
So in the third round, they got the guy who covers the wide receivers after his ACL heals. That would be cornerback Savone Revel. We have all been saying Siobhan Revel this entire time through the draft process. Literally everyone who covers the draft. And we were informed on Friday night, it's actually Savone. So it is not Siobhan. It is Savone.
How does he spell it?
S-H-A-V-O-N. Which looks like Siobhan.
Siobhan.
Yeah.
But it's Savone.
It's Savone. So okay. Savone Revel from East Carolina. Brian's 11th ranked player in the draft. They get in the third round, who falls a little bit because of the knee issue that took all but three games from him last year. And so teams didn't really get to see him. All right. How does he rise up? How does he play? But then on day three, they didn't have a fourth.
No, they did not.
So
why?
Because they traded it for Jonathan Mingo. So there you go. There's your receiver, too.
There's your number two.
Then the Cowboys take Texas running back Jaden Blue, Florida linebacker Shamar James, Oregon offensive tackle, who apparently is going to play guard here, Ajani Cornelius, UCLA defensive tackle Jay Toya in the seventh round, Clemson running back Phil Moffa in the seventh round, and then Maryland defensive tackle Tommy Akingbasoti, I think is how you say it. But, boy, this is a return to their general principles outside of the East Carolina pick of we're only taking the big school players. Alabama, Boston College, Texas, Florida, Oregon, UCLA, Clemson, Maryland.
That's an old Parcells.
That's been Will McClay in the past because he believes those players are going to have a
higher floor.
Well, and they're better prepared for what they're going to run into here.
Yeah. It's a higher floor. That's what it is, right? You know, like the draft is, it's the draft is probably as much, and I love to get into like the detail of this with Will or Broadus even. Like, is the draft as much about not missing as it is about hitting? Like, you don't have to hit in terms of like this guy's got a fourth rounder.
Probably just depends on where your team's at.
Yeah,
like a few years ago, yeah, they needed CD and Diggs to like hit quick if they wanted to extend their window. Where they're at right now, yeah, do they just need somebody to push them over the edge a little bit, or do they need another one of those drafts? I guess it just depends on the philosophy of where they think they're at.
So the idea of taking, they essentially went best player available the entire time.
Yeah, and I'll say this. Of their nine picks that they made, so a lot of people view Dane Brugler as the standard, that they want to know where Dane had a guy. So of the nine picks that they made, four of them went where Dane had them graded. So like they take Jaden Blue in the fifth round. Dane had Jaden Blue in the fifth round. One of them was overdrafted. It was their very last pick. Dane had Akingbasoti as a free agent, and they took him with one of the last picks of the seventh round, which isn't that big deal. But four of them were picked later than where Dane had graded them. So you're talking about really big value. So Ezeraku is taken in the second round. He was graded in the first. Revel was taken in the third round. He was graded in the second. You had Jay Toya, who they picked in the seventh round, the defensive tackle. Dane had him in the third round, and they take him in the seventh. And then Phil Moffa, he had him graded in the sixth round. They take him in the seventh. So they clearly were going best player available. And we'll play some of this audio from the scouting staff next hour at 7:20, where they talk about that philosophy a little bit. But this was 100% about prioritizing who's the best player left on the board. That's who we're taking. Because those first three players they got, I'm pretty confident for them were top 40 players. So they feel like they got three of their top 40 players. But the issue is we headed into the draft saying what realistically? Running back and wide receiver two were probably their biggest holes right now.
They were big holes for sure.
In terms of starters that were ready to play. And they came out of those first 2 days with neither.
Neither.
And that's, you think I'm an idiot? That's tough for some people to swallow. So was this too much of a commitment to the best player available philosophy?
I mean, probably, because, you know, like, I do think it needs to be the best player you have at a position you're looking for.
It's a blend, I think.
It's a blend because, you know, you can go best player available all day and then you're going to wind up, I mean, you could wind up taking like four players for the same position, you know, and that doesn't work.
Now, I think they would be I think there would be they'd be measured enough not to do that. So they had a bunch of guys that were close together. We talked about this on Friday, that when they took Booker, they had like 5-6 guys that were all graded roughly the same that were at the top of their board. And the tiebreaker was it needed to be something that they felt they needed, right, which they did feel like they needed guard. And it needed to be something where, how are you winning on tiebreakers like intangibles, leadership? And Booker just blew everybody away on that.
Yeah, look, I think Booker's I love the pick. I have no qualms about their first round pick. I think taking a guard is a smart thing to do. They evaluate the position well. It's a position of need. It's a position of value. So I have got no problem with that. I don't have a problem with the other picks either. But, you know, this is the second year in a row where they went into a draft needing a position and didn't get the position.
Yep.
And they were slaves to their board. And that's fine. That if that's what you want, if that's the route you want to take, you know, you're going to get a good player, right? You're going to get the best player on the board. But I also think that's very arbitrary. And we are, as general as people, we are generally bad at talent evaluation. And there's a level of arrogance isn't the right word, but there's a level of like, where you just feel like, oh, I'm right. I'm right here, so I have to be right. Well, I've got to take this player because he's number one on my board.
I think they were willing to be more flexible this year because they had, outside of the top like 5 or 6, they had a bunch of guys that were just crushed in this small area together. It was a tight stack for them where you're talking about the guy you pick at 12 might be similar to the guy you pick at 45. And that is a testament to not only, like, I think a lot of people hear that and they go, oh, my gosh, you're telling me I got the player who should have gone in the second round at the top of, you know, a lot of people in the first pick. That, no, it's a little bit of, maybe a little weak near the top, but also really deep in the back to where guys going in the mid-40s were considered in other drafts would have been considered more like mid to late 20s. So it was a combination of that. So I think they were willing to lean more into their needs where they needed to. It's just by the time their picks would come around. For instance, on the second round, I know that they were prioritizing heading into that day. I know they had at least one first round grade left.
Okay.
And it was a running back. I think they had Quinshon Judkins in the first round from Ohio State. And he got taken with the fourth pick in the second round. I think they would have been interested in if he would have fallen down to him, the South Carolina safety, Nick Emanwori. He did not make it to them. He got picked with the third pick. I think they would have prioritized taking Luther Burden, the receiver from Missouri, if he would have slid down. He didn't. He was at 7. He was the 7th pick of that round, couldn't get down to 12. So when it got down to 12, I think they had a collection of guys that were clearly separated from the others. And by the time it got to their pick, I think the only one that was left standing was Ezeraku. So then it's like, all right, well, we don't have anybody graded close enough here to justify jumping for a position. And so then you look into the third round, and I think when it got into round 3, there were several receivers that had already come off of the board from the second round and then a little bit into the third. And when you look at some of the ones that were behind it, Jalen Knoll, Iowa State, I love him, and I think they would have had him around the third round. The problem is Revel would have been, if Ezeraku had not been on the board when they picked in the second round, I think Revel would have been a consideration for them at 44.
Mm-hmm.
So you're talking about when he gets all the way down to where they're picking in the third round, he's way above anybody else they have left.
Way above. And so that's because of the injury.
And the injury, or just in some instances, the position got pushed down the board. The corner position got pushed down the board, where there were just other things that, when everything's bunched together close like this, it really comes down to teams and their flavor or their style, and how does that player fit in, and it pushes some guys down the board that you wouldn't have normally thought would have got there.
Was there a moment that you wanted them maybe in that second round to move down?
They entertained trade offers on both. On both
2 and 3?
On both picks they took calls. They took calls in the first round too. But yeah, they wanted to pick up an extra 4. They really considered moving off of their second to try and pick up the 4th, and they just couldn't find a deal that worked. But, I mean, they looked for it. It was a buyer's market. So when you're picking up trying to sell, it's really hard to get the value.
See, in that first, like, I don't have a problem, you know, taking less to move down. Not like a ton less. But, you know, I just from the standpoint of, like, they needed bodies. They needed that 4th round pick. You know, they needed more players. That was it.
Some of the thoughts on the Franklin injury attorneys fan text. 615 says they drafted Jonathan Mingo in the fourth round. Just because you got your Christmas gift early doesn't mean you don't get it. 817 Sanders.
Okay, what does that mean? Like, if your Christmas gift isn't any good.
Right. No, I think that for that, but what they're saying is like, yeah, you may not like it, but that's how they did get the receiver. That's what they used. They used the fourth rounder on him. Just like in the past, it's not the same player, obviously, but they used their first round pick on Amari Cooper. That's how they used it.
Yeah, Amari could play.
I mean, Mingo didn't get a chance to play. I still don't think I would not have traded a fourth round pick for Mingo. I don't think Jonathan Mingo has the capability of even being a number three receiver here. But to be fair to everybody involved, he hasn't gotten a shot to show it yet. He will get a shot because I think Tolbert's time has run out here. In terms of not off the roster, but his time has run out here is like, hey, you're going to get this crack. I think that opportunity is left. It does make me wonder if receiver is what they're, when Jerry talked about at the end of last week or at the pre-draft press conference, when he talked about, hey, we've got two significant trades we're looking at or we're calling around about and we haven't settled on yet. It does make me wonder if receiver was one of the things they were looking at and just, if they may still be looking at it and trying to figure out, do we want to go get, I don't think George Pickens is the guy, but somebody like a George Pickens. Are we looking at something like that?
Very nice. Sean and RJ here at 105 through the fan. We were the home of the NFL draft. We were also the home of the Texas Rangers. They had a tough one yesterday. Tough weekend for the Rangers in San Francisco. But I'll tell you this, I would take a 2-2 series without Miro and Robo. Big one tonight for the Stars. We get you set for it next on the fan.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today.
And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Brock Nelson accelerates with a ton of speed to the slot. The shot. They score! Guess who? It's Gabriel Landeskog! 3-0 Colorado!
That was TNT with the call on Saturday night. The Stars, they faced an Avalanche. 4-7. That's one of those days where it's like, I don't really know what else to say.
I mean, they got the snot kicked out of them in that game.
It's middle of the night, right? It's middle of the night for me. I'm in Italy.
Go Stars, baby!
When this game is going on, and my buddies are texting in the group, this period's absurd. It's gonna be a bounce back second. I hate the TNT commentators. And it was maybe next time. This game is trash. We're gonna get shut out. Thank God, Miro will be back Monday. These are all texts that I'm getting in this one group. Hopefully. Miro is back.
They got outshot 48-23.
Is that good?
No.
You're supposed to get outshot, right? You don't want the more shots.
I think
like
not
in
only,
golf, right? The less shots, the better.
Yeah, not only are you supposed to get outshot, you're supposed to get outshot by more than double. That's how it's supposed to work. Look, I think given the fact how poorly they had been playing at the end of the season and the way they've kind of rallied here and they even got back to the point where they were able to get up while they were in Colorado. I don't think you can be too upset with being, you know, coming back to Dallas 2-2 when you went to Colorado 1-1.
Yeah. No Robo, no Miro. You'll take it, right? You'll take it at that point. But I mean, it was tough getting, you know, a shot on goal. It was tough getting the puck down the ice. It was just a tough day. Were they due for a blowout? I have no idea.
I mean, they were due probably to get their heads kicked in a little. I mean, given how poorly they had been playing.
Yeah.
I mean, the first game of the series, they lose 5-1, but it was not that bad. You get two empty netters at the end. And before that, I mean, you had basically a clean look in the third period to tie it up at 2-2, and you just missed. And then they come back around and go up 3-1, and then you get the two empty netters. So, I mean, they played that game pretty close. It was one of the better games they'd played recently. And then, of course, they win game 2, they win game 3. So Yeah, a little bit of a letdown. I'm not.
And what does the money puck say? What does the money puck say?
Money puck said that they should have lost this game for sure. In fact, it was actually 51% to Colorado.
That's it.
That's it.
What?
I know. So that, I mean, that should tell you.
51?
Should tell you.
Stars are right there, baby.
Well, because the Stars close. Did have four power play opportunities. Colorado had one.
Gotcha.
And like they were equal on hits. They were equal on faceoffs. So there were still those parts of the game where the analytics would say it should have been a closer game.
Colorado is a favorite tonight at the American Airlines Center, 8:30 puck drop. But Colorado's minus 140 on the money line, and then Stars are plus 120. So they're it's not a massive favorite, but you are getting plus money with the home team in a 2-2 series, although one that has been probably outplayed for the most part.
Yeah, I mean it was so you were out when the series started. So
yeah, about the whole thing.
Like it was when the series started, I think Colorado and Dallas were tied for the third best odds to win the Stanley Cup. Because it was just all right, whichever one of them gets out of here is their odds are gonna shoot up. But yeah, this is gonna be a tough matchup. And so Colorado was actually favored, I think, heading into the series. And then, I mean, Peyton picked Colorado to win. I think Gavin picked Colorado to win. So, I mean, there was not a whole lot of hope for your Dallas Stars here.
Wow, Peyton picking Colorado to win.
Well, when you lose seven in a row in the season, it just bad taste in my mouth, man. Really bad taste in my mouth. But the Stars are alive. You know, they got a best of three series here. They got two home ice games.
Yeah, they do. I'll take that. I'll take 2-2 with two games at home.
Yeah, especially if you're able to get
Miro back.
Yeah, I mean, once you lost eight in a row, if you then tell me they win two out of the next three, and without having Miro and without having Robo, you're going to take that.
We are not in the NBA playoffs, Bobby, anymore. We sort of are because we still have one guy in there because he's still ours, even though he doesn't play for us. But he might not be in them very long, much longer either.
And over Reeves on the pull-up three, and he hits it again. His fifth three of the game, his third here in the quarter. He's up to 38 points.
Timberwolves Radio.
43 points from Ant. And they came storming back because they were down double digits heading into the fourth quarter last night. And they storm back. They win this game 116-113. And now LA's on the brink. They are they're down 3-1 to the Timberwolves. Not an unfamiliar situation for LeBron James to be down 3-1, but
no.
Man, Luka, I will say Luka is playing his ass off on the offensive end. I mean, you look at how he's played in these games. He put up 37, 31, then he was down in the next game with 17, but then he put up 38. He's been really good. I don't think I've ever seen a box score like this from Luka, though.
Dude, I'm thinking the same thing.
46 minutes, two assists, one rebound.
What?
Two assists and one rebound. I've never seen a game like that from him. But they were leaning on him offensively. He was playing well. 38 points, but he plays 46 minutes, and he's got to be just run down right now. He's played 40, 42, 40, and 46 so far. So they're tapping him out.
That's a lot. That's a lot. That's a ton of minutes. That's not what he is accustomed to doing.
No, he's
go back to the playoffs last year. He wasn't playing 46 minutes in these games.
So he wasn't playing that much. He was playing,
but he was playing 40.
He was playing a considerable amount. But I mean, they were even still. You remember he was having the what was it? Was it the knee that was bugging him really bad in the Oklahoma City series? He had the knee issue that was hampering him a lot, mm-hmm. and so he ended up, having to kind of battle through that a little bit. But yeah, his minute totals last year in the playoffs were upper 30s, lower 40s. But yeah, 46 minutes. In a game that doesn't even go to overtime, that's a lot for him to take on.
That's a ton of minutes, man. I don't know how he's going to be able to. But LeBron's doing the same thing.
Yeah, but I mean, LeBron's such a freak. LeBron's conditioned. Like, I don't know how Luka, given the testimony of Nico.
Right, that he has, that he's out of shape.
That he's just, he's bordering on what's eating Gilbert Grape. Out there on the basketball court.
I don't really understand that reference.
It's just a really fat person. Sorry, hold on. Let me jump back a little bit. When he's bordering on Brendan Fraser in The Whale,
that's, now you got something. Yeah. Now you're onto something.
Now I know what you got there.
Yeah, now you're onto something.
But I mean, how conditioned can he? How bad are the conditioning issues really? If he's still going out there and putting up 38 relatively efficiently in 46 minutes,
I think that we're past that. That whole narrative.
I would hope so. One of the narratives we're not past yet, and this is one that ESPN had the other day, and I think this is a good topic for you. You and Sean always say that you guys are the official show of legacy deciders.
Yeah, we do. We decide.
That's your job.
Yes.
You determine legacy. So over at ESPN, at the start of the postseason, they had an article of the six NBA superstars who need a ring to cement their legacies.
All right.
Okay, and I have an issue with this list because I don't think it makes a lot of sense, specifically if you're talking about for this particular postseason run. These are the players that they had, and this is from Brian Windhorst. Number one, Luka Doncic, Los Angeles Lakers.
Yep.
Number two on the list, not ranked, but just next one on the list, James Harden, LA Clippers. Number three, Donovan Mitchell, Cleveland Cavs. Four, Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, Oklahoma City Thunder. Five, Jalen Brunson, New York Knicks. And the sixth player on this list is Jimmy Butler with the Golden State Warriors. I don't know. First off, here's my issue with this list. I don't know that Jimmy Butler's reputation gets boosted much more if he wins a ring with
Jimmy is already seen as a, like, an alpha, just competitor, yeah, like a dog,
and,
right?
And a guy already, who willed two teams to the finals already. So I think he's already kind of cemented.
Jimmy's a made guy.
He's got a pass for right now. I don't think anybody's worried about that. But when I look at this list, when we're talking about if any of these guys were to win rings this year, legacy defining or legacy changing possibilities, maybe Luka qualifies since it would complete an absolutely insane story arc for his season.
Oh, gosh, for sure.
So that would be a big boost. But I mean, I still think if he wins this year and then doesn't win again for the rest of his career, he'll be considered a disappointment. Like, I think the NBA is going to want 2 to 3 rings out of him for his legacy to be solid. James Harden?
Harden's passed.
Harden winning a ring now in the role that he's in, that feels like a...
Doesn't matter.
That feels like a step or two above when Gary Payton won one with the Heat.
Well,
now I know James Harden's more... He's contributed at a greater extent. I know somebody's going to go, what do you say? I just said it was a step or two above. But it's the same concept of, you're done. There's no amount of rings I feel like James Harden could win that save his legacy as he didn't get it done as the guy.
Right.
Just like Russ. Russ could win two rings moving forward. It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
It's already been decided.
His legacy is... His days of being a legacy player are gone.
Whereas somebody like from the original OKC collection, Durant could absolutely help
to
himself.
To me, I think KD has to be on there.
Which he's not in the postseason at this point.
Right.
But yeah.
But still. Ant has to be on there.
Already? I think it's a boost. I'll tell you, the name that really popped in my head as I go, that he gains the most by winning a ring this year is Jason Tatum.
Oh, a second one?
Because to me, if Tatum wins back-to-back, there's not a damn word you can say to him anymore.
No, there's really not. Yeah,
and so to me, I think that changes his legacy completely. You had people even last year. Remember Jason Kidd, the gamesmanship? Well, Jaylen Brown's their best player. Like, he still had that going on. And so the fact that if he were to win another one, I think that's big.
I don't put Donovan Mitchell in a legacy category.
No, I don't either.
I don't think
maybe we should, going. Though. Maybe that's disrespect from
maybe
us.
Maybe it
I
is.
Don't know.
Maybe it is. I just don't view him that way. I don't view him that way at all.
Now, we get there was bad news yesterday because this is something that this guy would have been in contention initially had he not been having, but we've got a possible Achilles injury for Damian Lillard now.
Saw that.
And so.
And that now this is on the heels of, like, there was talk that he.
Heels, I get it. God.
I didn't mean to do that.
Come on, G-Bag.
What?
Jeez. Come on, G-Bag. G-Bag. No injury jokes here.
This is on the. On the back end of him having the blood clot.
Yeah, and he had worked his way back, and then he has this out. But Dame would have been one that if he were to win a title,
absolutely,
that would help.
I still think it would.
You know, the two people that I think could most be helped by a ring this year in terms of cementing their legacies or saving their legacies or whatever else, one, it was Tatum. The other one is not a player, but it's Doc. If Doc were to win a ring with Milwaukee, if he were able to salvage that, he's then shifting his narrative a little bit, because a lot of people, I think, look and go, Boston was a long time ago, and that was a super team. And, like, you make the joke all the time, his legacy is choking away 3-1 leads.
Yeah.
If he were to come in there and kind of salvage what has been a train wreck to this point, I feel like, in terms of since Adrian Griffin got fired to Doc Rivers taking over and what he's done there, I think it's been a massive disappointment. If he were to rally and they were to win, I think that helps Doc more than it helps any other player other than Tatum.
It's also interesting that they didn't put LeBron in this.
Because it's already solidified, isn't it, for him?
He's got, I think he's got one more person to leap in the eyes of half the country.
But would that push it? I don't know that it does.
Winning an NBA championship at 40?
With Luka as probably being your primary guy.
Well, he played 46 minutes.
Yeah,
he's playing the same amount of minutes.
I definitely think it's a unique title and it's one that people would reference, but I don't know that would be enough to change anybody's mind for anybody who has Jordan above them.
Yeah, look, I think the people that have Jordan above them, and I still do, but I think there's also a stubbornness that we have. It doesn't matter what he does.
Yeah, there's a little back in my day about it.
Yes.
But, it's also, I think it's impossible, as is the case with a lot of these arguments, it's really difficult to not only try and put Jordan in the LeBron era, but to say LeBron in the Jordan era. I'm not saying with the fouls and the rules and things or whatever else, but I am saying with modern sports medicine and technology and the way that guys train. Like, if LeBron was coming up in the era that Michael Jordan came up, but he's not 6'8", 260 and running like he is. That's not...
Well, he's also probably getting moved off of being the primary ball handler.
Yeah. I mean,
someone's going to put him in a power forward role.
Oh, he's a center. Yeah. He's down there with Bill Laimbeer.
So it changes. A lot changes, but there you go. I still think that, he could help himself quite a bit. If he wins another title, because that would get him to 6, right? With another one, he would have either 2 in Miami, 1 Cleveland.
No,
it would get him to 5.
Yeah.
It would get him to 5. I would have to consider moving him ahead if he wins another one. It's the age.
Yeah, thing. No, I mean, it's a big deal.
The age thing is a big player in this. The Rangers absolutely blew it. Yesterday, Diamond Cavs. One thing they could not do, they did yesterday and over the weekend. That's next on 105 through the Fan.